proposing iClass key diversification. The first thing I want to mention is iClass is a contactless smart card. And yeah, key diversification is often used to get over the problem of key management. If you have many key cards around, then you need some smart way to manage your keys. And that's where key diversification stands for. And the picture of the peeled off hardware, that's actually a reader, an iClass reader. And yeah, it symbolizes that we actually peel off the diversification of iClass. So this talk, I will give a short introduction. It's contactless, that means RFID. And since it's not mentioned yet today, I will give a short introduction. Then I will discuss iClass and PicoPass, how they relate, because they're two products. It seems that they're two products, but actually they are the same. Key diversification, and then we go into iClass key diversification, which is basically a DES encryption of a card identity, and then some function that is called fortify in the documentation of iClass. And I will discuss how we attacked the and how we found the actual function of fortify, how we found the how it worked, also, we could invert the function. So fortify, it's also mentioned in the documentation as a hash function, hash zero or h zero, it's called. And actually, we could invert the hash function, which is a bit contradictory, because a hash function, you should not be able to invert it. And finally, we come up with a key recovery attack that gives us the opportunity to get the master key of an iClass system. So in short, RFID is just using radio waves to communicate with cards, so you don't have to physically give your card to a reader, but you only wave it on front. And the card gets powered, you have passive and active cards or tags, and the passive ones get powered by the field of the reader. You have all different kinds of tags, but we in this case are talking about cards where the antenna is in the card. iClass is a product of HID, and HID is also related to the OmniKey readers, and OmniKey readers are able to speak with iClass cards. So you find iClass in many places. First it's ISO 15693 that says in what way you can communicate, what modulation is used, and that it was introduced in 2002, and that there are over 300 million cards sold according to HID. The numbers. So it's widely used, and HID probably gives some examples of where it's used, and that's the Bank of America Merrill Lynch, the International Airport of Mexico City, and according to them, Navy Base of Pearl Harbor for access control. Well, we see later on in this talk if this might give some problems if they need to change anything. It's also used as secure authentication. Navigo is a product that Dell uses. So for employees, when they enter a building using this HID card, they can also use this card to log in on the systems of the company. It's used in e-payment and billing systems. So yeah, like we have seen before with other systems like MyFair Classic, where we also were involved in, it's widely used, and therefore it's interesting to look at how secure it actually is. And one of the things that might be a bit worrying is that you have one master key for every system, so this master key should be really well protected. And iClass gives built-in key diversification. That means that they give you, they force you to use a diversification algorithm that they designed, but it's not publicly known how it works. So that is interesting to look into, and that's what we did. So MiFi Classic Keylock is for car security, like opening cars with wireless keys. HiTech 2 is also a card example. Okay, so we are going to look at this like key diversification. What we did was reverse engineering this built-in key diversification. So actually find out what actually is this encryption of the ID and what is this hashing function. I already put quotes around it because it's not really a hash function. And in order to do this, we needed to bypass the secure mode of OmniKey. This is this reader of HID where you can talk to this type of card. And we made a new library to communicate directly to this OmniKey, so we get more control over this reader, and that helped us to mount several attacks on the iGlass card and to make many traces. And we also made some custom firmware for the Proxmark 3, which is a RFID research tool, and in order to eavesdrop the ISO that type of communication. And we released all of the above on the proxmark.org website. And in the end, we show that hash zero can be inverted. And this way you can find the master key in a few days. So key diversification, you have many cards out there. And actually, the card provides its identity, and the reader uses its identity, provides it to a function, diversify, together with some master key that's secret and should be kept very secret. So it could be in a secure module, like a smart card that's in the reader, SAM. What we had was in the documentation this image with word art symbols from HID, from PicoPass, which is actually the manufacturer of the iGlass cards. Only iGlass is a way of configuring these cards. And it shows us something, and it gives us a good start to try to find out how this diversification works. So we did it in two steps. We first checked what was actually the configuration of this DES and chip serial number is the ID actually, and the secret key. And it says DES. That's a bit worrying. Why not triple DES? Is it really DES? And then after that, we found out how this worked. Then we looked at the key fortification algorithm, also called hash0 or h0. At different places in documentation, it's referred to differently. So we use this OmniKey from HID Global, which needs to be, if you want to do anything to communicate to iGlass cards, you need to speak with this reader encrypted over USB. So that's because they follow some ISO standard where that is needed. There was some example software out there from the Navigo software, and there was a DLL, and of course this software was able to speak with the iGlass card. And actually, Roel, a colleague of mine, he was able to obtain the key that was used for this triple DES communication over USB. So once we had that, we could send arbitrary commands to the iGlass card. That doesn't mean that we know the keys, because the keys are stored within the readers. But you can point to a certain key slot and you say, okay, I want to use this key slot to authenticate. And in this key slot, which is located in the reader, the secret key is stored. The authentication looks like this, where the card identity is used and a card challenge. But we did not really look into authentication. That's the next step. But here, what is important is this card identity, because this is used to derive this specific key. And this is the Proxmark, just to give you an idea of what the tool is. It was developed by Jonathan Westhuis, and it's very flexible. So it uses an FPGA to do the signal processing, and you can adapt the software. So if you want to do another demodulation and modulation techniques, then you just write new software. So we added support so we could see what's happening, what's going on. Another nice thing is that here we also have a side effect of the implementation of the reader, which is ISO tunneling. we saw it in the second session already that you have sometimes strange side effects when you combine certain components. And this is actually, we found that if we presented an ISO 1443 card to the OmniKey reader, which means that it uses different modulation and demodulation techniques, and we send commands to that reader, like, oh, you're speaking with an ISO 15693 card, which is the iClass card, then it added automatically an additional layer of 1443 around the packet, because you also need a header and a CRC at the end. So this way we found a fast way to communicate and emulate a card, because emulation is a bit harder, and we already had emulation for this 1443 communication, and we just used that to emulate using that kind of reader with libNFC, which is also open source project, to emulate the iClass card. And it was really useful, because then we can emulate the ID, and the ID was input to this diversification function. And this way we can change the ID very often and see what the reaction is, so what the output, how it affects the output. This is an example of a trace we made with Proxmark. Well, I won't bother you with all the messages in between, but the most important thing is here that we did 3 key updates. And we saw that every time you update the key, not the key is written sent over the line, but the XOR of the new key with the old key value. So you see an XOR all the time. And we found this, and we checked this because we changed first to a new key, then to another one, and then back to the first one. And then you see that the difference between the second two keys is needed to get back to the original one. So that's how we verified this. And it also turned out at the presentation in CCC last December, where they presented a nice way of recovering firmware. But I will come back to that later. So first, about the diversification, the two steps. First, an encryption with DES, and then the fortify fake function. We determined that it was actually, what it happens in the first step is just a DES encryption of the ID with the master secret. We verify this by emulating an ID, and then, well, actually, we can go to the middle step before the data is going into this fortify function. We can make two examples that map that make an encryption to the same value. That's just by turning it around, so picking a value and decrypting it with two keys that we chose. So this is not an attack against a key we don't know, but just to verify, we use two keys, different keys, decrypt the same ciphertext, and then use this P and P prime as identities. And when we fed them in, we saw that the difference was zero, which means that there was the same input provided to the hash zero, and so it gives the same output. So this XOR difference was a bit annoying. And also, in learning the input-output values, you would say that it's hard and that you would give up because you have 64 bits input and 64 bit output. But when we start looking at it, we found out that you could partition it in several parts, and that's how we could reconstruct the function. So we emulated several IDs, and we made sure that the input to fortify was only one bit flipped every time. So in the first case, we flipped the rightmost bit, and we saw that there was a difference on the left-hand side of the output, the left two bytes. And then we flipped the second bit on the right, and then we saw two other bytes flipping. And on the left, if we flip bits on the left-hand side, then there was a lot of more changing. But the pattern we saw was that Well, the first column says which bit we flipped from the right, from the rightmost side. And you see that, well, the rightmost bits only affect the leftmost, the four leftmost bytes of the output. And then the second group of bits only affects the rightmost bytes. So there we already have something. And we also see that, because, oh yeah, I have to explain, this is the OR map. So we OR all the, we do many, we provided it many different flips, many different random IDs. And then we OR all the results, so we see which bits get affected. And if you do it, as, you do it many times, you get this overview. And 7E is actually for the in binary, it's 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0. So somehow, from every byte, again, the left and rightmost bit are not affected. And for the remaining bits on the left 2 bytes. It was a bit different, but you can also see something like, well, it's like if this one bit flips at least 7 bits from the byte, that, it looks like negation, but that was what it was. And the leftmost byte looks like it does something with a permutation. So we found some structure, and we broke it up in the several parts, and then using some scripts with Perl and regular expressions, and we found the effects of what was happening. And you see that, well, the interesting thing is that this permute byte, this X, the bits actually get divided over the rightmost bits of the output. And well, you see it's 64 bits, but the rightmost 8 blocks are all 6-bit blocks. There's some operation on these blocks, but then they appear in the middle of every byte. But since the bits of X, the permutation bits, are at the rightmost positions of every byte, that means you can map back. You just read out what X was, almost. And for Y the same, because Y is somehow placed to the leftmost bits. And it seems that they want to prevent some collisions in the output, or they want to get certain circumstances for the generated diversified key. Because as soon as one of the variables from Z are equal, then it replaces the output value with something. And there are some modulo operations involved, so it's not X, but X modulo 70. But in the end, to make it short, it appears that you can easily go back from the output back to what the input was. Well, you get a few candidates. And in the worst case, you get 512 candidates, but on average, you get 4 candidates. And if you're lucky, you get 3. So then we are back to only DES, and that's actually something you can break in a few days. So we recovered this hash function, and it is clearly not collision resistant or one way. So that are some important requirements for a hash function. And we really are wondering why this is called a hash function in the documentation at all. And yeah, recovering the master key becomes now comes down to a brute force attack on that single DES. Now to recover a master key, we have to. There are some assumptions, of course. If you can steal a reader or make a reader do a key update, because we need one key update message. Then we can go back from this message to a set of candidates, and from these candidates we can do a brute force attack on DES. And then you have to check it again one time to see if you found the right key or it was only a lucky shot. So for every key K, you check if it equals one of the pre-images. So, but at some point, yeah, we wanted to verify this because it was all worked out. But okay, we had some candidates, but now we have to do a brute force on this, and we don't have the expensive equipment. So we were talking with Bochum in Germany, and they said, well, okay, that takes some time, blah, blah. But then we thought of the presentation on the CCC where they showed a nice demonstration of you have a pick, and if it's not correctly configured, you can dump the firmware. So by reading out not the complete memory at once, because that was prevented, but because of some strange weird configuration, you could read out blocks and then reconstruct the whole firmware. And in the firmware, of course, is the master key. And we did this and checked this against the key candidates we had, and it turned out that we found the right ones. So that's these are the HID readers. You can buy them on eBay, we did. And you can try to remove the harsh. It should not be possible, but we had one that had very soft harsh, so the circumstances were not right, probably at the creation of this layer. And using a debugger, we were able to even run the reader and set breakpoints at certain points, and power it up. And this way, we recovered the firmware and verified if it was the right key. So now I come to my conclusion. Single DES for diversification seems a bit weird, also since the readers support triple DES. So why this design choice is made, we don't understand that. The hash zero function should be renamed, or at least it's not pre-image resistant and not collision resistant. And it can be inverted, which is the most bad thing. So it does not really add something, although it's referred to as fortification. So you expect something. And maybe the purpose could be that you do this because you don't want to, if somebody sees the hash, then you don't know the original ciphertext, so you cannot even mount a DES attack. But then you would have be better off using known hash algorithms like SHA-512. And what is a bit alarming is that one master key is used for every iClass system. So if your company uses an iClass system, there is one master key to that gives access to all the iClass cards. And now we are busy looking at the authentication. So that's after the diversification, you start authentication. And that's interesting, this algorithm. So, and it's interesting to see when we are looking at this, we kind of understand some decisions that were made for the hash zero. So that they were trying to prevent certain collisions, and that turns out to be good, because then that prevents some attacks again in the authentication algorithm, which is funny to see. So that concludes my talk. Yeah, we contacted HID, and we got a reply by email, and it was also the reason why we asked not to publish the paper immediately on online. And their response was, "Well, keep us updated if there are any developments, additional developments." Yeah.
You told them that you inverted their hash function that was the fortification. And
yeah, actually, we sent the whole paper. Yeah. Yeah.
So those are the same people who's threatened to sue IO at HID, right? So, right?
Yeah.
So, and then, is this an improvement or what?
No, we were not. No. I hope I get out of the U.S. later on this week. Yeah. I had to leave all my fingers at the border. Is that normal? Yeah.
Hi, Rick Bear. I have an irreverent question. Since you're an email contact, why don't you just spearfish them, get access to the inside of the organization so you can distill their algorithm like they do with the RSA?
Yeah.
It seems like you're going about this the hard way. You should just go ahead and exploit them internally and steal the source code to the algorithm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's also because we like this kind of work. Yes. So, yeah. Yeah.